Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast, monthly album roundup for the month of July 2017. I'm your host, Robert, and I'm still blocked by Corey Feldman on Twitter. Now to see if I can get blocked by Jake Paul. And with me, I have...
I'm Alex, and yes, I'm actually here for once. Don't make it a regular thing.
And...
I'm Morgan, I've got no clever thing to say.
It's okay, maybe you can get blocked by someone on Twitter too.
Just like I did with beep.
Oh, right. Beep. Beep yes. Knows what beep did.
Yes, he does. Him the stupid little bullshit.
Aw, oh, man, I thought you were going to say another beep there, too. Great, now I have to actually do the pinch harmonic thing. Damn it. I don't even remember where I downloaded it from the first time.
Don't you save your files like I do?
That would require me to be responsible.
Get damn on it. My level, scrub.
Whatever.
Okay.
But, yeah, we, of course, have our next album roundup to do here. And, you know, I got to be honest, compared to June, which was pretty packed top to bottom with stuff, this month seemed kind of like... I mean, not that there wasn't stuff worth carrying out, but it didn't feel as jam-packed or busy. Almost kind of feels like it was just kind of like on cruise control throughout.
Yeah, July was not a very... eventful month, mostly for, you know, the metal scene. We only had like a couple albums in that genre we can talk about. Not this month, though.
That is true, but it was certainly busy in other areas. In fact, let's actually start off with a little overview of the at least some of the major releases from this past month. And starting with, I got three categories here. The first one, of course, being really the big one, hip-hop and rap, where it seemed like most of the big releases were in. So
pretty much.
Yeah, so, of course, starting from the top, we had 21 Savage's debut full-length album, Izza album. We had a new album from Twista, Crook County, Perfect Timing, a collaborative effort between Nav and Young Metro.
If Young Metro don't trust you, I'm gonna...
We had the sophomore album from French Montana titled Jungle Rules. Vic Mensa's debut album, The Autobiography. A collaborative album from Mr. Leaf and Acrobatic titled Resolution. Of course, the newest double conceptual release from Experimental at Shabazz Palaces. Quasars Born on a Gangster Star and Quasars vs. the Jealous Machines. One of the odder ones, there was a surprise new Public Enemy album called Nothing is Quick in the Desert. I guess Public Enemy still does music?
Yeah.
Okay. We had a new mixtape from Mr. Gas Pedal himself, Sage the Gemini, titled Morse Code.
We still doing shit?
I guess. We had Meek Mill with a new release, Wins and Losses. Tyga's hashtag bitch, I'm the shit too. We had the debut album from XXL freshman Aminé titled Good For You. And probably the biggest rap release of the past month, Tyler the Creator with Scumfuck Flower Boy. Ah, that title. And hey, for the record, Tyler, I remember Fillmore as a thing that existed. I don't remember the specific shit. He's got a point.
Yeah.
He does have a point, doesn't he, Rob?
Yep.
Yes. And now for the rock and metal releases, which, you know, I'm not getting super technical with classifications here. I just lump them all in here. So, starting from the top, we had a double album from Melvins, A Walk with Love and Death. The newest album from longstanding shock rocker Alice Cooper, titled Paranormal. Groove Metalers Prong with a new album, 0 Days. Polish Death Metalers Decapitated with their newest album, Anti-Cult. We had Boris celebrating their 25th anniversary with a new album, Dear. The return of hardcore veterans Trapped Under Ice with Heatwave. We had Not Time 2 from Winter Sun, a.k.a. The Forest Seasons. The newest album from Technical Death Metalers, Decrepit Birth, Axis Mundi. Also from Technical Death Metal, Rings of Saturn with Ultu Ula. The sophomore effort from progressive metalcore act Ocean's 8 Alaska titled Hikari. Indie rockers Foster the People with their newest album, Sacred Hearts Club. We, of course, had the pizza maestro himself, Jared Alonji, with his Canadian softball project, Awkward and Depressed. The music collective Broken Social Scene with Hug of Thunder. Post-hardcore act Silverstein with Dead Reflection. in this moment, aka the Masters of Cringe with a new album Ritual, we had Nine Inch Nails with a new EP, Ad Violence, and of course indie rockers Arcade Fire with their newest full-length album, Everything Now. And as far as the rest, there was literally only two other things in the rest. We, of course, had the self-titled debut album from electronic producer Muramasa and pop singer Lana Del Rey with her newest album, Lust for Life. Yeah, you know it's a slow month, but the biggest thing you have going for you is Lana Del Rey.
Yeah. Not like August, where everything's coming out on the 25th.
We'll get to that when we get to that.
Yeah, I know. It's just a prelude.
Busy as hell for me. Fuck.
Consider this the prequel to the sequel. That is August.
That reminds me, I gotta get my BT BAM tickets.
I wish I could!
Alright, they're sold out. I laugh at your face.
You may laugh, but I still saw Devin Townsend and you didn't.
I will literally punch you through a wall.
Oh! We're getting hostile up in here, huh?
Isn't it always
the you damn well better believe we're getting fucking hostile.
No. It's fucking hostile! Like that.
Are we always hostile?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, we are. But we're going to, after that little roundup, we're going to kick things off here with Alex going first, since he only had like one thing to talk about, quite literally, it seems.
Yeah, and before we started, you actually mentioned to me the new Decapitated album. I was trying to think of what I listened to the other night that I didn't like. It was that Decrepit Birth album. I did not like that.
Oh, I didn't hear that one. I guess I should be glad I avoided it.
I'm not sure how you feel about it, but I tried to listen to it, and I just felt nothing. But yeah, that Decapitated album, solid. Very solid.
Hoo booey.
Yeah, but anyway, the album I'm presenting to the table here is Boris's 25th anniversary album, Dear, which, if I could describe this album in one way, it would be this. It is the sound of hell opening up and everybody just falling into the pit where they're about to get pitchfork raped by Lucifer and his several dozen succubi daughters. It's a fun time all around.
That's a colorful description.
Yes, I'm very colorful with that. But yeah, Boris, they know what to bring to the table. Extra doom, extra gloom, extra loud death, despair, savagery. And oh, so many low tunings and droning bass. It brings a tear to my eye hearing this wonderful music.
Hell, sometimes literally, because there are some songs in there that actually get, like, doomy in a depressing way. Especially Memento Mori.
Yeah, well, you know, Stephen Wilson said it best. Happy music makes me fucking miserable.
Isn't he also the guy that said modern hip-hop is more innovative than rock music?
I don't know. He says a lot of things. Most importantly, though, he said Porcupine Tree is never coming back. Why? He said it doesn't exist anymore.
Hey, looks like now we're on the same page. You're never going to get more Porcupine Tree. I'm never getting a Strapping Young Lad reunion.
Well, yeah, that's because Devin Townsend changed his life. Stephen Wilson's just super busy with the solo stuff. There's a difference.
Not as far as I'm concerned. The end result is still the same. But yeah, we're getting off track here. We should probably steer back to the topic of Boris.
Yes, Boris. I really don't know what else I can say to it. It's super doomy. It's super gloomy. It's super drony. It's super heavy. It is the sound of hell opening up and everybody just falling and dying in so many painful ways. And I, for one, love it.
Ah, yes. Very well said. Now, let's, I guess, move on to me, where I'm actually going to start off, last time I started off with my top favorites, I'm going to mention some quick honorable mentions here before getting into my favorites, and then the worst album I heard this past month. So, of course, picking up from where Alex left off, Boris's Dear, you know, great way of honoring the legacy of this band that's been around for, again, 25 years, and this is their, like, 24th album overall. Holy shit, that's a lot. Damn. That's almost average of like an album a year at that point. But yeah, it's just another solid collection of really grimy, doomy, slow-paced, aggressive, and sometimes melancholic tunes. Best way I can describe it, like for those who have been longtime fans, this sort of throws it back to really early in their career. Like I'd say around the Amplifier Worship album. There's still some Boris albums in my blind spots that I still need to get to, but this one, Amplifier Worship, is the closest reference point. And if there is any faults to it that makes me put it as an honorable mention, it's just that being a, quote, love letter to the fans, as it were, it's not really pushing the envelope or presenting any new ideas. It's just, you know, doing the slower, sludgier, doomy takes that they've been doing for a while. They do it really well, but it's not really, like, you know, pushing forward in any way. It's still a good release, though. And then up next, we had the return of Trapped Under Ice after, like, about 6 years or so with their newest, their third album, actually, Heatwave. Now, I'll admit, Trapped Under Ice never really did much for me with their first couple albums. It just kind of felt like a weaker version of stuff that other better hardcore metalcore acts were doing. Like, Trapped Under Ice would never be my first choice for this kind of music. I'd always just go, like, you know, Expire or, like, Old Wounds or, hell, even Ringworm if you want to even throw some thrash influence in there. But this album actually was not too bad. I think they finally managed to pick up some experimentation, especially in terms of the weird, almost Sepultura-esque Latin percussion that they sometimes throw in there to kind of accentuate the hardcore beats and all. It certainly gives it a nice touch and helps it stand out more than their past albums were. So, you know, if you have 14 minutes to kill, I recommend giving this album a shot. Of course, I'm only putting this honorable mention because I know Mark is going to bring it up probably in more detail later. Shabazz Palaces with Quasars, Born on a Gangster Star, and Quasars versus the Jealous Machines. Of course, with Shabazz Palaces, once again, another highly dense, experimental, really weird, abstract collection of hip-hop tunes. You know, delving further into the usual sort of mental, you know, social commentary and all of, you know, Ishmael Butler and his views on, like, modern society, how we interact with technology, hip-hop, modern hip-hop music and all. And, of course, it has some pretty cool tracks on it, especially the Highlight 30-clip extension with its, you know, hilariously sarcastic critiques of modern rap culture and the people who just, you know, worship it mindly. But there's still some other good songs here as well. The only problem I have with that is that it kind of gets a little too abstract to the point where I'm not even really sure what the concept even fully is or what it's about. Like, I guess that Quasars is supposed to be like a exaggerated version of Ishmael's own views. But then, like, according to the press release, there's also the Palaceer Lazaro, who is, I guess, the human contact point for Quasars on A Murderka, this fictitious, air quotes, version of, you know, our America. But, yeah, it gets really dense and difficult to...
A Murderka.
Yeah, it gets really dense and difficult to figure out, but it's still, you know, fun time. And, of course, one more to throw here, technically not an album, but a film score, but one that's absolutely excellent and you should check out if you haven't seen the movie yet, which, why wouldn't you? And that would be Michael Giacchino's excellent score to War for the Planet of the Apes.
Ooh.
Yes, just, as always, the man is just on top of his game when it comes to composing films, and this one brings one of his most unique and eclectic, but also unnerving and tense yet. And all I have to say is, and this is probably spoiler territory, but why did Caesar have to die? Sorry if you haven't seen the movie yet, but in my defense, you should have seen it by now, so you have no one to blame but yourself.
I was broke.
Not an excuse, Mark.
But give me money, man.
Okay, sure, I will. I'll PayPal you right now. But anyway, getting into my top favorites of the past month, as Alex mentioned earlier, the new Decapitated album, Anti-Cult. Now, I actually took some time to go through the band's discography proper, and, you know, I checked out their earlier albums, and they were okay. The problem was they kind of felt like they were really derivative of other death metal bands, like, perhaps most obviously, Vital Remains. And it just kind of felt like it was just kind of just okay. But then, like, around their last few albums, they definitely slicked up the production and the songwriting. And now, they're basically just ripping off Soilwork. I kid partially, but they definitely, I think, found their own niche being basically just an even heavier version of Soilwork. Like, think of Soilwork without the soaring melodies or melodic vocals. This is just straight, savage, thrashy, technical death metal just all over the place. In fact, if you need some other reference points, in addition to the Soilwork influence, I'd also say there's bits of Lamb of God and, heck, even a touch of Meshuggah, especially in the opening track, Impulse, when you listen to some of those guitar leads, the way they're produced, the tone and effect on them, the way it just kind of like these one or two notes that kind of howl over the rest of the song. And, you know, it kind of comes up in a couple other tracks as well. But for the most part, it's just straight heaviness. The vocals are very, you know, killer. Everything just hits. There's a lot of punch to it, a lot of attack, especially on the lead single from the album, Never, which is, like, second to last album on this track, and shit, I think it might actually be the longest thing track on this album. But yeah, it's just a continuous assault with a really great ebb and flow, the way, like, you know, the harder hitting hearts hit, but then it always knows how to give, like, just enough breathing room for, like, the parts to actually feel just that much more heavy when they do happen. And of course, his other killer cuts like Death Valuation. Yeah, that's a title. And Kill the Cult. Are you sensing a motif here? They don't like cults. But yeah, just absolutely from top to bottom, some great performances, especially on the guitars and the drums, with just how fast and relentless they are. And it's absolutely something you should check out. It's really great, well-executed death metal, if admittingly a little derivative here and there. And now for my second album here, this one is actually really underground. In fact, the only reason I know about it is because an acquaintance of mine, by the way, shout out to Scott Murphy from Heavy Blog is Heavy. When that site did like their own death metal roundup for July, this was one of the albums that was mentioned. I just kind of clicked on it for shits and giggles, and I was really impressed by it, and I had to check out the album on Bandcamp. And it is the self-titled debut album from Chicago death metalers Advorsa. That's spelled Advorsa. Yeah, ADV, like that company that existed once. But yeah, this... it's only 7 tracks, but in those 7 tracks, there is some absolutely gritty, grimy, relentless death metal in there. The best reference point I can think to give of is, at least instrumentation-wise, think Cannibal Corpse. It definitely draws from that with a lot of like the hammering blast beats, the really fast tremolo guitar pickings on like the track Dead by Dawn, and probably the most explicitly Cannibal Corpse-ish being the fucking groovy-as-hell Necrol Faction. Jeez, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. But there's definitely a different take on it, because the vocals aren't those, like, just, you know, really incoherent, like, dog barks of, like, you know, Chris Barnes or even Corpse Cry or something. So, sorry to, if that sounds insulting. I like Cannibal Corpse, but come on, that's kind of the truth. Instead, the vocal approach here is definitely more in line with something more grating and howling in the vein of, like, Pig Destroyer or Chimera, or hell, if we even want to go outside of, like, death metal influence for there. I don't know how many of you remember the metalcore / mathcore act Coalesce, but the vocal style from that band definitely feels like an influence here. You just hear the way it's like, you know, just punching, and there's a lot of attack, and there's, it just has this really howling quality to it while still feeling very punchy. It's not like an atmospheric howl. It's definitely just, it's almost like a buzzsaw to the senses. And it just really helps to complement the very old school kind of death metal instrumentation, especially, again, I have to mention Necrol Faction, because this really is one of the most monstrously groovy tracks that you'll hear in the metal genre, not just this past month, but maybe of this, like, entire year. Seriously, 2017 has a pretty good death metal going on. It's just, it feels just huge and massive, and that's one of the things you want out of good death metal. You want it to be just this giant, monstrous thing. And it's just, again, great collection of songs, especially that album closer, Devouring the Gods. And, of course, for my last big album, and I dare say this is probably my album of the month, if I were to say one, of course, the return of Tyler, the Creator, with Scumfuck Flower Boy. Who that boy? He's a flower boy.
Yeah.
Now, I always look forward to new Tyler albums. Ever since I first got a hint of him back in, I think it was around 2012, 2013. Definitely when Wolf came out. That was like my first Tyler album. And, you know, I was really looking forward to whatever he would do next. And I'll admit Cherry Bomb was a bit of a letdown. Mostly because of, okay, lyrically it was fine, but the production was just kind of all over the place. Like, A, it didn't know what kind of album it wanted to be. And second, why the hell was Tyler's voice mixed so low in, like, the actual mix? Seriously, like, you should not be able to, like, ignore Tyler the Creator in a song. He's Tyler the fucking Creator. You're gonna notice him. But on this album, it definitely feels like it's going back to, like, the style on, like, Bastard, Goblin, Wolf, like that kind of production, but definitely more
soulful.
Yeah, definitely more soulful. Like, as far as tracks that you could say are like those really in your face bangers, like in the vein of your Tamales or Pigs or Domo 23, there isn't really a lot of that here. In fact, there's only really two like banger tracks, and we already heard one of them with the single "Who That Boy? Who Him Is? Yeah. Who That Boy? Who Him?" God damn it, that's such a fucking catchy hook. God damn. And then of course we had the track "I Ain't Got Time," which kind of has, it almost kind of feels like a spiritual successor to Tamale, but it's kind of like mariachi Spanish bullfight beat with like the weird trumpets in the background, and of course the weird clicking percussion. Fun fact about that beat, according to Tyler, he apparently came up with it around 2013 when he was fucking around at Kanye West's studio. He tried to suggest it to Kanye, but apparently Kanye didn't like it.
Okay.
Bastard. But yeah, the soulfulness definitely takes center stage here. Like, when you listen to that first track, Forward, you listen to the lyrics, and it kind of gives you an overview of, like, every topic that might be hit on, from, you know, his crushing his general sense of depression, his inability to, you know, communicate with someone that he really loves, his obsession with cars. It almost kind of feels like, and pardon me if I'm using this word wrong, but kind of like a lyrical overture of what's about to come. And then even the beat itself, like, again, it's really soulful, but speaking of Kanye, this almost kind of gives me the impression of, like, the opening track from 808s and Heartbreak, specifically because you hear this kind of back and forth bleeping across the mix that kind of sounds like a heart monitor. And, you know, going from there, you hear a lot of these bars that are, you know, Tyler just delving into how lonely he feels, how he's trying to, you know, grow as a person. And personal growth is probably the key motive across this entire album. I mean, he invokes a lot of imagery of flowers, especially with, like, you know, that title. And that's because he's trying to sort of, and you definitely hear it most in the track November, where he's trying to come to terms with growing out of the scumfuck persona. You know, the same kind that said, I'll crash that fucking airplane that faggot nigga Bob is in. Ugh. To something more beautiful and, I guess, more soulful. And he's kind of even, he even brings it up in the song November, where he's very worried that he might get pigeonholed into that scumfuck persona, even though he's genuinely trying to change. Which is a kind of anxiety that I think is actually very relatable, because fuck knows I kind of panic about that a lot of the time. But you're not here to listen to my personal problems. But yeah, there's a lot of that across much of the album. You even hear more of the imagery in, of course, the second track, Where This Flower Blooms, which tackles the theme of growth in terms of him being just a relative, you know, internet curiosity to one of the biggest fixtures in the music industry. You know, overcoming obstacles, a theme that also comes up in Pothole, a track which has a shockingly decent guest contribution from fucking Jaden Smith, of all people. I know, that actually happened, but it actually wasn't that bad. And then, of course, there's the big sort of thing that caught a lot of people's attention, namely in regards to Tyler's own sexuality, on the song Garden Shed, where it very much sounds like he's trying to, like, come out as being gay, which I know a lot of people tend to get, like, really on edge when you're trying to discuss this, but I feel like it's something that has to at least be acknowledged in my I think Tyler maybe sort of is, or maybe he's just using it as like, you know, just to further the metaphor of growth from something ugly to something beautiful. But, you know, yeah, I'm not going to delve on this anymore. And there's just a lot of also tracks about his own sense of isolation. You know, you had the previous single 911 / Mr. Lonely. Specifically in the Mr. Lonely half, you hear the phrase, he raps the phrase, "They say the loudest in the room is weak. That's what they assume, but I disagree. I say the loudest in the room is probably the loneliest one in the room. That's me." And that's kind of, you almost kind of feel it like, pardon me if I'm ruining something, you know, soulful with something silly, but this kind of sounds like the hip-hop equivalent, or Tyler's own equivalent, to when Rick Sanchez goes, "Wubba lubba dub dub." It's a loud, obnoxious phrase that's actually, if you look at it, a desperate cry for some kind of help. I mean, you kind of get what I'm saying here?
Yeah, I kind of do.
Yeah, and there's also the track, Boredom, where, you know, he's complaining about being bored, no one's, you know, calling him, he's just kind of holed up in his, you know, fucking mansion and cars and shit. And I'm trying to remember if it was either, I think it was Boredom, or maybe it was a different track. There's a really kind of humorous line where he says he's in a mansion alone just watching reruns of Clarence.
Okay.
Yeah, which kind of feels like it's throwing back to that one time he referenced Adventure Time on a song.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah. Yeah, it's a... But as I said, the album delves into a lot of really dark territory. It's definitely, not that his previous albums haven't been personal, but this is definitely the most personal and intimate release that Tyler has released so far. And it's really well produced. A lot of it is well wrapped. There's a really like legitimate sense of sincerity in how he's trying to communicate his anxiety and depression. And I just want to point out one of the really interesting lyrical allusions here. As you may remember, in Who Dat Boy, which has the guest verse from, God help me, I hope I remember this right, A$AP Rocky?
A$AP Rocky.
Yes, I got it right this time. In A$AP's verse, there's a humorous throwaway line that references Vince Staples and specifically his album Summertime 06, which, you know, you listen to it in that context and you're like, oh, okay, that's kind of a, you know, humorous lunch line. But then you hear the Who Dat Boy motif come up again in I Ain't Got Time, which, again, is the other big rap banger, so there's kind of a little bit of a thematic connection there. But then when you get back to November, which is easily the most personal and soulful track on the album, there is a line where he raps, "What is your something akin to what is your November? Mine was the summer of 06. And that's kind of an interesting lyrical point, because Vince, in most of the interviews he gave up for Time 06, the recurring statement he gave was that it was more or less that time in his life was sort of the beginning of the end of sort of his sense of innocence. That's sort of when he started to become a more jaded, sort of nihilistic person. Basically the kind of person you would hear on his albums. And I think it's interesting because it's clear that Tyler is trying to pair that specific idea with the idea of November, because he says, again, my November was summer of 06. So he doesn't mean it like literally November. He's just talking about the last time in his life when he felt kind of purely and truly happy, which again really just drives home deep just how to the bone this album cuts as far as, you know, the Tyler persona. So that's about all I have to say. I mean, personally, as far as my own taste, maybe I still like Wolf a little bit more, but there's no denying that Flower Boy is the tightest record that Tyler has made to date, and I'm so glad he was able to bounce back from Cherry Bomb. We miss you, buddy. Now, can you give us a premiere date on the Jellies already? It's only the end of summer, dude.
It is August.
Unless he means, like, summer proper, you know, global sense, and not just our colloquial understanding of summer. Yeah. But yeah, that covers all the really good albums, and now to get into the fucking garbage. Now, I could say 21 Savages is an album, but I get the sense Mark is probably going to delve on that already, and trust me, the Rap Critic and the Melon already made all the needed jokes that needed to be made, like how he doesn't understand the whole Monica Lewinsky thing went down, or that he doesn't understand there's no place where you can buy individual Pringle chips. But no, instead, my worst album of the year is a technical death metal release, and that is, of course, Rings of Saturn with Ultu Ula. I don't know how many albums deep they're in their career at this point, but yes, this is their latest one. And if you're wondering about that title, allow me to quote an interview quote from one of the members. The album name, Ultu Ula, means time immemorial in Sumerian cuneiform. Ultu Ula is about aliens transcending space and time and uncovering an ancient, incomprehensible entity that threatens the fabric of universal existence. And, okay, already I want to grab this album and fucking give it a swirly in my bathroom after a night of Taco Bell.
Ew, damn.
Yeah, now, I tried to listen to this album before, in the past, the keyword here being tried. Now, I want to make it up front, I actually really don't give that much of a shit about the overly produced, oh, they actually just play halftime and speed it up in the studio controversy, because, okay, I listen to plenty of progressive metal acts, you know, like your Peripheries, your Dream Theaters, your Contortionists, so it's not like I have an inherent issue with music that's very overproduced. But even if this album is as overproduced as it is, it doesn't sound like any of those albums. It sounds annoyingly... If there's one word I had to use to describe the production of this album, it's muddy. Very, very muddy. The guitar chords are muddy. The fucking drums, the double bass, triggers and whatnot all just kind of bleed into each other. It's just kind of a constant, like, thudding against your senses. Not even like an attack or a sharp hit. It's just thudding, you know? Like, listen to what I'm doing right now. I'm thudding my fingers against my forehead. It's basically like that. You sort of feel it, but there's barely any impact, and you're just kind of left really bored. It's just kind of annoying and obnoxious as all hell. Especially whenever they decide to do, you know, those quick shredding leads, because of how this album is produced and kind of the moneyness of it, those leads oftentimes kind of sound like keyboards, and you know, they might as well be keyboard runs, because it kind of sounds like when you're listening to a Children of Bodom album, except, one, nowhere near as good as Children of Bodom, and second, there isn't even, like, a clear delineation. It's like, the notes, they kind of shred and go by way too fast for you to actually perceive it as, like, a rhythm. Like, a quick tangent, as soon as you're done listening to this, I want you to go and look up a video by YouTuber Adam Neely where he discusses what is the fastest that humans can play and hear music. And there's kind of an interesting point in there about, like, inter-onset intervals, or basically how many milliseconds between, you know, sort of beats in a measure that we can reliably perceive it before it starts to muddy together into a pitch. I think these guys don't really understand that concept, because the notes whiz by so fast, you don't even hear... Wait, was that supposed to be a melody or arpeggio or something? No, it just kind of hears like... Like a fucking fax machine or something that's on the fritz. Like...
The hell?
So, this is everything Glenn Fricker tells us not to do when producing an
pretty
album.
Pretty fucking much. This would be like... Okay, if this were a novel or something, Glenn Fricker would be Ishmael, and Ultu Ula would be his Moby Dick. Just for you literary people out there. And this also doesn't help with, like, the actual songwriting, where, again, it just, there's not really much of a flow or a gradient. It's just kind of constantly thudding against your senses with muddy guitar chords and really screechy pseudo-arpeggios. And the only thing that really stands out is the keyboards, which actually occasionally do sound okay, like these kind of alien dark carnival runs, but you're too busy being annoyed by everything, even the vocals as well, to even really notice. In fact, the only track that comes close to being solid is, of all things, the instrumental track on here, The Macrocosm. And that's because it's the only one that actually sounds like an actual written song. You know, there's actually proper flow between clean parts and heavy parts. there's occasionally breathing room for all these sections. You can actually sort of hear the rhythms and even the lead guitar melodies, okay? But that's just one track out of 10. This whole thing is just like 40 minutes of wasted time. And, you know, if you really want to listen to, like, some technical death metal, like, I'm looking at my CD shelf right now. I got a copy of Obscura's Omnivium on here. And, like, if you all want some tech death metal, you sure you don't want to listen to Obscura? The production is much slicker. The songwriter is much tighter with better written songs and more well-executed experimental passages. You know, dig through their catalog. I think you're going to find it a lot more satisfying overall. But, or hell, even listen to, like, Atheist or something if you want to go more old school. But, like, I just have no use for this. This album, like, is a waste of fucking time. Holy shit.
It's pretty much complete masturbation.
Pretty much. Except, not even the good kind of masturbation. In fact, to quote Bennett the Sage, this is the equivalent of getting a half-hearted hand job from a woman who's so disinterested she can't even look away from the evening news. And I just have to say right now, since I'm looking at this on the Wikipedia page, Metal Injection gave this an 8.5 out of 10. Why? Don't you guys have standards? I mean, I like you and all, and you produce quality content, but you gotta have standards here, people. Come on!
Apparently not.
Whatever, but that was my bitch fest, so now we just gotta move on to Mark to let him, you know, muse about rap albums. So, you have the floor.
Okay, then. Well, so this is the last one, and since most of mine are mostly hip hop, and I got six. I'm gonna get to all the way. The best of this month, easily Tyler the Creator's. It's kind of fucking Flower Boy. This is definitely, yeah, it's definitely stuff from Cherry Bomb, because I thought about the album as much, but holy shit, this album is so soulful. So it's. It not only got the best production, it really dealt with some emotional shit like what Rob said at first. This really, like, I think, I don't know if I like this better than Wolf. I think it's equal there. It's like, although there's more soulful shit on it than Wolf. Okay, but yeah, this got some fantastic songs there. Like, I really like, you know, Who That Boy, 911, Garden Shed, my absolute favorite one there. Boredom, and I even like that short interlude, that very short interlude sometimes, where it's like, they do the piano, it's like, sometimes, do-do-do, da-da, that's something like all that shit. Like all that shit, but yeah, it's a definite solid one from Tyler. He definitely set this game up. And my second favorite, which I thought would be number one, but that got bugged down a bit. This is a very, very experimental, very weird, out there album that does kind of get too extra because you're wondering, what the fuck was that? Like, okay, I still dig some of the songs released. Like, I still dig Dirt Clip Extension. I dig Shine a Light, and there's more songs I did, like. These are songs I really dig from the first one was Moon Whip Quas, which sounds like a very dancey, but spacey joint, which I and they're like, the concept, it was kind of a bit hesitant because I figured what the fuck was going on, but like any other Shabazz Palace album, it's like, I want to figure you out, but, god damn, you are so confusing. You're interesting, but you're confusing.
Yeah, he does not make it easy for anyone.
Like, okay, I very much enjoy the sounds of the album. I do think, like, will I probably listen to this by the end of the year? Maybe, I don't know. I think, in terms of their albums, I think maybe I like, in terms of production, I like Left Majesty more, but this is a very solid effort from Shabazz Files. It's very good. And now,
Oh, by the way, one quick thing. When I was actually doing the review for the album, I finally figured out what the hell was that goddamn sample on Shine a Light, because I knew I heard it somewhere before.
And what was it?
And it's a sample of the song I Really Love You by singer Dee Dee Sharp.
Oh yeah. Okay, that's what that song was. I knew it was something like that. All right. Anyway, down to the shit that I had listened to that you know, Amber took for, that nobody took for. Vic Mensa's Autobiography. Now, out the way. This project from you know, Chicago rapper Vic Mensa. I've known him for mostly. I don't know him for mostly features on Kitchenada and Flume's albums, but I haven't really dug his most of his catalog, even though it's mostly just Eats and mixtapes. So going in here, like I know it's about, he's from Chicago. I know I'm gonna get some shit about, you know, him growing up in that area and all that shit. And I gotta say, it's actually a pretty good, it's a pretty good album. I say that he does deal with some talks about, like, you know, like I said, Chicago abuse and suicide and talk about loved ones that he lost, especially on the song, Heaven on Earth, where it goes on the perspective of either him, his dad friend Cam, and even the killer's point of view, but still fuck you for killing my friend, you asshole. This is like, yeah, I really do dig the concept of that. There is songs when he's on the more social issue shit, that's where he shines. Like, I really do like songs like Memories of 42nd Street. The song Wings with Pharrell and Saul Williams, I really dig the hell out of that song. I like We Could Be Free, cause I do like how Vic Mensa calls out the hypocrisy of the All That Matters crew, where they say, yeah, cause I like what he did that. I also do the bonus tracks up there, Rage and OMG with Pusha T, which I fought Pusha T with that song. It's definitely, you know, a banger. I will say, but the production is very around, like, you got some rap rock shit going around, you got some soulful shit on there. It's kind of almost a bit weird. Like, I gave a perp on the song Down With Some Ignorance, which I thought was good. Pharrell's on there. The one guess I thought was kind of get it, but maybe he had Weezer on there. That Weezer on the, which where he talks about, you know, like this girl called him cheating sometimes. It's like, yeah, that's not really a favorite of mine, because I thought you kind of paint yourself as not, really not kind of a dick in that song, and maybe the
okay,
gorgeous.
Okay, sorry, huh? But Weezer and Vic Mensa.
Yes, Weezer and Vic Mensa. Weezer.
Fuck it, I don't got anything here.
Yeah, it starts my head too. Yeah, but like I said, like, shit. Okay, like I said, like, here's like another song that's, you know, a bit, you know, on the love side, like, on Lives Herself Like That and Gorgeous, which does talk about, you know, dealing with, you know, seeing the two women, which I thought, okay, I dig the vibe, but the content, not that much. I mean, I do like some vocals from Sid the Kid. And, maybe those songs are kind of going in, and some lines I do thought around now is kind of a bit kind of corny on the side. But it's not that horrible. But other than that, Vic Mensa actually made a solid album, to be honest. Like, I actually dug what he made here. I actually would listen, like, I listened to, like, possibly four to five times for some repeats, and I figured, he's dope. I would listen to this. So there's that. Another quick one. The album from I'm gonna fuck his name up again. Amine.
Oh boy, Amine.
Yeah, yes, him. The recent
anime.
Yeah, that nigga. The XXL freshman with his debut album, Good For You. I got much to say about it except that, well, hey, I mean, hey, it's a very okay pop rap album. That's all I'm gonna say to it. Like, it's a very
Yeah, I kind of heard the same thing for most
people. Yeah, wait. It's something like I would just, you know, say, oh, okay, I would listen to this if I was bored. Like, of course, you get the single Caroline, which I've grown to either tolerate. I mean, I don't really have much hate for it, but it's like, okay. And then they have some songs to do, like, I do like songs like Turf, Sundays, and Money. I do dig some of those tracks in there. The intro song, I did dig for the beat of it, which is kind of weird, because again, with this whole orchestral sound, which I thought, shit, I actually like it, which doing this Amine. I'm gonna call you Adam, okay? That's your real name anyway. Fuck it. Okay, so like I said, Adam. Okay, Adam. You did okay. It's a very okay pop album. It's like you didn't suck.
It's got to be better than Ugly God.
Well, okay, yeah, that's true. So, yeah, so anyway, enough of that. Let's get to the other one. The last one. Meek Mill's wins and losses. Of course you know Meek Mill, the guy who you know because you hear him get beat by Drake a lot of times. Who actually received a lot of L's the last recent years. I mean, from that beef, losing Nicki Minaj, he's just been receiving L after L, like beef with Drake in the game at that. And now he got his third studio album, which, third, like he did a couple of mixtape shits, but anyway, well, I'll say this, what the fuck, Meek Mill fans will love it, but it's like, if you heard it, you probably hear this. You're not gonna hear shit new with this album. It's like, I don't think it's terrible, but I don't think I would go back to it for any. It's like, I do get some good sounds from it. I do get some good content from there. Like, I do like the song "Young Black America" with the Dream. Dream, which. The more I think about this song, the more I think about, wherever I heard that production before. Oh wait, you ripped it from Jay-Z's song, Mama Lily, from the Blueprint album. Content is good, but it's like, I recognize that sound from somewhere. It's like, wow, really? And then you get some standard flossing back tracks. Like, you got tracks like Fuck That Checkup featuring Little Uzi Vert.
Oh boy.
And you get, you know, those songs for the ladies, like Whatever You Need, which is basically them just ripping out the 20 tone song, Whatever You Want. Girl, you know I can't deny whatever you need.
Was that the song from that one episode of Rick and Morty?
No, that feels good.
Oh, right.
Only that 20 total tone you get on the hook, you get Chris Brown and Ty Dolla $ign.
Why?
I don't know. And of course, it's produced by Mother on That Beat, ho.
Yeah, boy.
and then of course you get some content like, you know, him taking shots at Drake and maybe trying to say, you know, keep my shit with Nicki Minaj out of spotlight, don't put my shit on out there. And then you do get some shit where he's talking about, you know, one of his lost, you know, his lost homies, like rapper Lil Snoop. If you heard of him, well, he was rapper signed to Dream Chasers, but he got killed in a very young age, which is kind of sad. That's kind of sad. Like, I can't mess him on that. Like on this album, like, if you're the type of guy that listen to, like I said, Meek Mill fans, they'll love it. They'll probably think it's the best shit they ever heard. But for non-Meek Mill, it's like, yeah, it's the same shit I hear from again. It's like, I don't think it's terrible, but it's like, eh, I can take it or leave it, but yeah, it's passable. And now, the moment you all been waiting for.
Hoo boy!
21 Savages. It's an album. It's a knife. It's a really not that good of an album.
It's a stupid forced meme.
Pretty much, like, yeah, pretty much. Oh boy, this album, this whole boy, I thought, at least with Meek Mill, he got some energy going for it. 21 Savage sounds like you got this same old stupid monotone voice, like, you think it's on Miz and me, it sounds like, I don't know, like what monotone character I'm thinking of, but as a gangster, but as a killer, like, shit, like
what was that, what was that one guy from King of the Hill, the one that always talks really low and you can't hear a damn thing he's saying?
Boomhauer?
He's like that, try to rap.
Yeah, pretty much, and...
Well, you got to wrap your
that too, and but his shit is very, very so forgettable. Like, I know he's rapper that talks about, you know, coming up from the streets, getting what he need, and okay, like I said, I get that, but the way you deliver it, it just sounds like you don't give a shit. You sound bored. You sound like, I wish I was doing something else other than, you sound like you're wearing the button that says, I really wish I was doing some other shit other than this right now.
Oh, yeah. That button.
Yeah, that button. And not to mention, I know the, you know, chick, you know, like, it just sounds like usually he'd be on that docket, but when he tries to be on that, when he tries to be, you know, on that, like, very smooth R&B, vibey, auto-tune shit, it sounds very, very, very awkward.
Oh,
like,
my God.
So fucking awkward. It's like if one of us try to sing, I don't know, some Spice Girls or some shit. It sound very awkward and very uneasy.
And I'm pretty sure Alex once did it on the podcast, sarcastically.
Yeah.
I'd have to find it, but I'm sure it's there.
Oh boy, and...
And yeah, I just want to say about the mumble thing really quick, like, okay, I know it's kind of a meme to make fun of people who make fun of mumble rap, but it's not like I'm against it or anything. There are ways to make a kind of moody, low-key rap delivery work. Like, we discussed with Shabazz Palaces, where it sounds very atmospheric and weird. There's Earl Sweatshirt, who uses it to sound depressing and morose as all hell. Shit, even Ka, who is probably one of the better examples of it, because it really does, like, create this just mood that vibe out to. But with 21, he's trying to sound hard and thuggish, but doing the moody thing while trying to rap lyrics like that, it just doesn't work. And also, this album feels like it...
Single like a Pringle.
But not even getting to that, this album feels like it takes forever to sit through. Like, okay, forget about the fact that the album literally ends with a 7-minute freestyle. In the first two tracks alone, when you get to the song Bank Account, it's only about 3.5 minutes long. But when I was listening to it, I felt like I was sitting there for 7 minutes. It's just that,
that's the thing.
Is it over?
That's the thing. This would be, the album is like an hour, but shit, it does feel long as all hell. And not to mention these dumbass lyrics. Like I said before, single like a Pringle, red, red, pee in the bed. That's a lyric. And there's one like, she lived it like a lollipop. Rubbed it like a, let the bunny hop or some, I don't know. And then get some dumbest territory like, all your rap niggas weird all your niggas queer, which is so boring. Please shut up
And let's not forget that one line.
Yep.
the one where he's like, I get head like Lewinsky.
Yeah.
The greatest line since fucking magnets. How do they work?
Yeah, but see, at least with magnets, there's like a legitimate curiosity. That's a question that can be answered, but like, with fucking, okay, does 21 Savage come from like the dimension where Mandela died in prison? Does he like come from an alternate universe where like Monica Lewinsky was president in the 90s and she got impeached because Bill Clinton went down on her?
Oh.
He probably comes from a universe where Jerry and Beth have a happy marriage together. The mutant universe.
Oh boy. But yeah, it's like he can't do shit on these beats. Like, wow, you wasted good beats on this guy. Like, for real. Like, you got some solid bang of production, but it's like, give it to someone who can actually, you know, can liven shit up.
Yeah, just give like a question to the producer. Of course, not just Metro Boomin, but there's a DJ Mustard beat on here. Of course, Savage produces one of his own beats. And shit, there's even a couple contributions from Zaytoven on here.
Yes, Zaytoven, Southside, Jake One. Yeah, like all these beats, they all sound good, but you need a better rapper to rap on them. Like if it was for Metro Boomin, I would not have been like, I gotta turn this shit off. But fuck. Oh, and the worst thing is, this shit got no features. The only one feature is Young Thug, and I don't think you can barely hear me on this, like, a whole lot. Like, he does some ad-libs and shit, like, yeah, something, yeah, like, then again, yeah, they got all kinds of features. It's like, no, matter of fact, no, it's no features. It's just 21 Savage all the way through, and it gets for it, and it's bad. And it's bad. It's a bad album, okay? There, us.
So what you're saying is it's not good. Boom.
Pretty much.
MLG air horns.
Yeah, not good.
Yeah. So we're basically at the end of the episode here. So If you enjoyed listening to this, I'm probably gonna try and link down a Spotify playlist to the various albums we've addressed down below. And you know, if you feel like hitting any of us up to, like, tell us, like, some of your favorite albums of the past month, feel free to do so in the comments, or even on the social medias. Speaking of which, time to sign out and plug our shit. So, Alex, where can they find you on the internet?
Plug away. Or of Azure, Twitter, Instagram, BBS, Reel to Reel, Pigeon Carrier, and Telegram.
Of course. Mark, what about you?
On the Twitter via Mac Chabin Media and on my site, the Mind of Hybrid One at thehybrid1.wordpress.com. Yeah, that's it.
That's it. And as for me, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Rob Barracuda. If you want to email me with any questions, comments, or inquiries about the podcast or opportunities and shit, you can do so robert@surrealresolution.com. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Google Play and iTunes. Hopefully I'll have this up by Friday. But be sure to also subscribe to my YouTube channel, Rob Barracuda, you know, where we always post episodes in video form every week. So be sure to hit the bell tab there as well, so you always know when new episodes of the podcast go up. Of course, follow Surreal Resolution on Twitter, @SurrealReso. Visit us online, www.SurrealResolution.com. And that's basically where I'm doing... that's basically where I'm cutting it off here for the plugs. I'm not going to plug the rest of the shit, except for, of course... Shout out to the producer, Mr. E, for graciously letting me use his music for this podcast. Links to his shit down in the description. Well, thank you for joining us for our second album roundup for July 2017. We will see you again on the next main episode. And, of course, see you next month to recap fucking everything that's in August. Fuck me.
It's going to be good. It's going to be big. We're going to have probably too many albums to talk about.
Hot damn.
I might actually talk about two albums.
Hoo boy! But yeah, until next time. Seriously, fuck Corey Feldman.
And fuck you, Beth.
Who the fuck makes a cheese, avocado, and tomato sandwich?